Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, and welcome to the Chance Encounters podcast. We've been running board game cafes around the UK for the past 7 years now. From hen do's to family do's, from first dates to breakups, we've recommended the perfect game for every situation. But now, we want a fresh challenge. Every episode, we'll be inviting a guest to put our board game knowledge to the test. They'll become armed with an abstract and absurd scenario, and it's up to us to figure out what that situation calls for and recommend something that will totally brighten up their gloomhaven. Whoever's recommendation our guest loves the most will score a point, and at the end of the series, one person will be crowned the Titan of Board Games.
I'm so glad, by the way, that I can still see Ben's eye roll when you make those jokes.
That's part of the fun.
I just
wouldn't have it any other way.
At some point over the series, you'll dislodge an eyeball or something, I'm sure. That's the aim.
Get stuck that way if you keep rolling them and the wind changes.
I'm one of your hosts, Richard Scarsbrick. I own, run, founded Chance Encounters, so I've been there for 7 years now. And I have recently begun eating like a grown-up. I don't pick things off my food or request changes when ordering food. So I feel, take away your turkey dinosaurs. I want the real turkey. Thank you very much.
Wow. Well, I'm Ben. I work with the Yogscast. I've been playing board games for hundreds of years, and I'm a big old nerd. And I am a big food baby who will throw it on the floor if it's not what I want.
And our guest host for this week is Russ.
Hello, my name's Russell. I actually work at Chance Encounters, and my role is head of giving a damn about which way people store the boxes in the shelves.
Would you like to clarify?
Now, and it's the correct answer is...
Horizontally.
What's that? Horizontally, yeah.
Yeah, really? So they all crush the one at the bottom?
No, because you've got to be clever with the way you stack. And obviously you're not just going to one huge tower of games. That's just madness. But no, there's pros and cons to each, as I'm sure Rich will know.
Running the cafe, still store them vertically. Actually, that depends on the box.
Well, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
We can see right now, I've got vertical and Paul has got horizontal. We're already at war.
Wow. I'm a maverick.
I think we've already...
Yeah.
No, apparently Paul's on my side. Yeah, brilliant. Speaking of Paul.
So our guest this week is gaming rules fantastical Paul Grogan.
Thank you very much for joining me. This podcast is about storing your games horizontally or vertically. Is that what we're talking about? Because I have a lot to say on that topic.
Exactly, yeah.
I have a lot to say on it.
We're going to talk about the big issues.
So, obviously, you saw them horizontal. You've got... Is that in the back, the no too many bones?
Yeah, that's the trough chest for too many bones. But, yeah, horizontally all the way.
Ironically, that's the only one that's stored horizontally and the rest is vertically.
Other way around.
Wrong way around. I always get them mixed up. Some people have a problem with the left and the right. I have like horizontal and vertical. I just can't.
So what's been happening is you've been telling everybody in the cafe to store it vertically and then being like, why is everyone storing this the wrong way? So, well, thank you very much for taking the time out, Paul, to come on this podcast. I hear you've No worries. I hear you've got this a scenario to pose.
Yeah,
for
so
us.
As I was saying to you, Rich, sort of last week and the week before, I'm not really good at these improv things. I'm more of a rules person and a details person and specific. So I asked my Patreon supporters earlier on today for a few scenarios. And we got sort of two scenarios that I was going to choose from. I'm actually going to merge them together. And I might not tell you the full scenario when we start, but as some of you may know, I'm getting married later this year. And the night before the wedding, we've got both sides of the families together. And we need to pick a game that is going to be suitable for the night before a wedding for different people of families, different age groups and everything else. Mm. There is a twist, but I'm not going to tell you the twist yet.
All right.
Wait till we've really got ourselves deep into some recommendations.
Yeah, we'll be like, oh, we're just thinking this. And you're like, actually, you can only play while hopping on one foot.
Does that mean like we want to get it out of everyone's system? We need to have a game about like interrupting and causing a panic? Or does that just giving people ideas? Do we need to like...
I mean, that's up to you. There's two ways of going on this, isn't there? You could actually just have a nice, peaceful game that allows everybody to get along and there's no trouble. Or play Game of Thrones and have people literally fall out with each other and then be scowling at each other all the next day at the wedding. So that's up to you to come up with some suggestions.
So it sounds like you've got a fairly loose scenario for us, which is great. Would you prefer for everyone to be all playing at the same time, or could we have like multiple copies of these games? What sort of like groups would you like?
Yeah.
Like you said, age range is
quite a long
one.
Yeah, the problem with everybody playing the same game is I already know that that is going to limit us on game selection to what normally classes as a party game with sort of, you know, 8-10 people. So I'm more than happy if it is split into a couple of groups, if that widens the scope of the thing. And obviously not everybody in the group will want to join in. Some people might not want to join in, so it, you know, it might just be that there's four or five people that go, oh yeah, go on then, we'll play a game, and everybody else watches. So
is that so that's not a requirement then, that everybody has to play?
No,
but a good spectator sport as a bonus.
Yep.
It's kind of funny because I've worked with Chance for a couple of years now, and I've actually done with Rich a wedding that hired out Chance Encounters to bring a board game selection to the wedding. So I feel like we've got an unfair advantage.
Oh, wow.
Maybe.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I see how this works.
Oh, we'll find a guest. And the thing we did recently. Very good.
To be fair, it wasn't that recent. It was last year, so. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, was that bringing games for an actual the wedding day?
Yeah. Okay. So everyone had the wedding. They basically had the like the breakfast, even though it's.
It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon is the wedding about. Breakfast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Breakfast at night.
And then everyone was like, hey, where's the board game? So we had an entire, it was a beautiful location. It was like a mansion house, and we had our own room, and they'd asked to play two rooms and a boom in this particular case as well. And just everyone got involved. It was amazing. Obviously, they had a core group of probably some board gamers, but we brought a whole load of things, and it was good to see everyone from young. But that was a selection.
No, this is one game. And this is the night before the wedding for people who are not necessarily play many board games.
So this isn't like stag / hen do either. This is just everyone's chill. They've come for maybe some cream teas, having a nice, easy day before the wedding.
Do you want me to let you know the twist? So,
by all means.
It's not common knowledge, but Vicky's not actually from this world. So she's from a small planet called Seti Alpha 5, just beyond the Mutara Nebula. And while she might appear human, her parents dropped her off on this planet many years ago with the human appearance. Mm-hmm. Her parents are not actually humans whatsoever. They are aliens from another planet. And apart from dropping Vicky off here, whose destiny it was obviously to meet me, they've not had any contact with the human race.
Oh my God.
So this is actually more of a alien first contact situation about the kind of games that we might play to show what kind of people we are. Just a little bit of a twist.
To represent all of mankind.
I feel like you've deflected the dreaded first meet of the parents. onto us. Now you're like, well, if the first meet of this alien species doesn't go well, it was on those guys who gave us the board game recommendation.
I really hope that Vicky's parents don't actually listen to this podcast, because they might be slightly offended.
I hear they're avid listeners.
Do you think it's a metaphor? Okay, can they at least understand, are we talking about a language barrier? Like,
Let's say that the language is okay. There's not a language barrier like in the arrival. Mm. We are able to communicate with them.
Okay.
And do they have
have they selected a human form?
Like, do they have fingers?
It's funny you should ask, because this is one of the things that I was thinking about this afternoon in the run-up to this. I thought, I know, but I'll say that they don't have arms. And then I thought, they've got to have something. So let's say they've got four legs and no arms, but they can do things with their legs like we can do things with arms.
Mm. Okay. Ooh, all okay. Right.
Dang, I was hoping for tentacles or telekinesis or something, but we can make legs work, I'm sure.
Oh, interesting. This is a tricky one, because I don't even know where to start. I had a suggestion right at the start, and you've really thrown me off.
Well, what was the suggestion? Is it going to fit, or is it not?
Well, I don't want to give it away, because I might still just use it anyway if I can't think of anything else. Because it's the closest thing I've got to an answer in this. How many of them are there, by the way? Because I don't know if we ever clarified how many people. Not that it hugely matters, because not everyone has to participate. But
are we talking like 20, or are we talking about 500?
We're talking probably 6 to 8 people. Because it's just the two families meeting up the night before the wedding.
Okay.
Oh, and what a tournament setup.
You're instantly launching these into a competitive scenario between the new aliens that have just come down, having the first meet ever, and being like, right, well...
It's a good way to integrate people, though. You can put, like, half of the aliens and half of the humans and swap the teams over.
Ooh.
So they force them to work together. Make some unlikely partnerships.
Yeah.
How do we feel on that? Like, sometimes you do end up going, you know what, we want to play this game of four, but there's eight of us. Let's form four teams, basically, of two. Have you had any success?
Well, I can give you my thoughts on that, because I've had multiple successes with that over the years. So, we could spend half an hour just talking about this, but I'll try and be brief. Vicky, my partner, doesn't like competitive games. She doesn't really like the competitive nature of games. So I remember going way, way, way back when Agricola came out, we would play Agricola, the solo mode, together. Mm-hmm. So it'd be two people playing a solo game. And since then, I've actually done that a lot. And I've streamed a number of videos on my channel where I've played a solo game with two people sat there next to each other. And I don't think anybody else has done that. And it's not a common thing, because everybody thinks solo gaming is all just one player. It doesn't have to be just one player. Yeah, also, I remember playing Mysterium once, which is a maximum of 7 people, but we had 8. But we wanted to play Mysterium. Mm-hmm. So we came up with the idea that two people were actually the ghost. And they would sit behind the screen and they would consult with each other. And the game was so much better. Because Mysterium, that one person who sat behind the screen having to make those decisions on their own without talking to anybody else can be a little bit stressful. So we've played Mysterium with two people playing the ghost, and it was great. It worked really well. And a more recent game, a Spiel des Jahres winner, Pictures.
Mm.
Pictures is a maximum of 5 players. We've played it with 10. We played it with 5 teams of 2. Now, this isn't in the rules whatsoever, but it was brilliant. It was a lot more of a party game, and it was basically the 5-player game, but each player was actually a team of 2 players. So I've had a huge amount of success with exceeding the player counts by having multiple people on a particular team together.
Do you feel like you're trying to stress test games sometimes? Like, well, I wonder how many we could, like, raise.
This
it
is
up
the
to,
the like... famous 24 player of Codenames, where 12 of the people couldn't even see what was going on and just wandered off.
I actually played Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, which is a really, really good game, literally last night. And one of the issues was, because you have these small cards with the crucial kind of items on them, when you're playing with like 10 players, as we did last night, and our table was sort of long and thin,
right.
So like you couldn't even see people's cards at the other side. So that is a bit that is a concern when you're playing with too many players, actually. Yeah, the other thing I was going to say is you, because I remember you, because I know Paul, I've known Paul for a while, and I remember you saying about the game Under Falling Skies, which I actually really like, and it was developed as a solo game, and on the box it does say 1+ because you suggested it as a game that could be played cooperatively as a team, like not having, so I thought that was cool, and obviously you've been doing this for a while, and now you've impacted the industry with such wild behaviour.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense, though. Really, any solo, any co-op game or any solo game can be interchangeable, effectively. As long as there's a game you're playing against, there's nothing to stop you playing.
This just cracks open so much more of the board game community. I never thought about it this way. And now you're like, co-op and solo are basically the same thing. I'm like, holy moly, like, now I understand why everyone talks about this has to have a solo mode. Because I'm like... This is why people need it. And I get that because, you know, I do quite like competitive. My wife is famously anti-cooperative, so I tend to be very clear of the solo or co-op specifically in this guy. But now I'm just like, oh, right, so many people could benefit from this. Okay. Mind's blown.
I actually don't think... there are some games certainly that don't work for any game where you've got to manage multiple sort of hands, and especially games like, in my opinion, Frosthaven, because the idea for me personally of having to manage my own character and then another separate character just is like too much for me. Especially when what you do does impact the other person and sometimes prevents them or lets them do a move that they plan to do. So I don't think it works necessarily for all games, but it does. Yeah, there's a lot of games.
I know, I'm with you on that, Russ. When I'm playing any game, I need to be able to concentrate on what I'm doing. I'm friends with people that play Gloomhaven four-handed as a solo game. And they love it, and they are able to deal with it. And I struggle to just deal with one character and move in the right direction at the right time. So, yeah, for me, I just need to be able to concentrate on what I'm doing.
That's a crazy amount of, like, brain space you would need to not only logic out your own turns, but then to be like, I'm... It's like playing 3D chess in your head, but then going into two more dimensions...
I don't know if you've ever played it with like, because you start with so many cards, and just that like I struggle to come up with my own turn, and I play cooperatively with my housemate and friend Ben, and we take our time with that game, so I wouldn't even like to think if either of us were playing like on our own it would take double as long as it does, and we're already way past the average time it takes for people. So the worst thing is, and just going back to something you said earlier on, because you said about playing in teams, right? Does anyone else have this thing? Because I just like dread the idea of playing a competitive game in a team of people. Like, I want to be responsible for my own downfall. Thank you very much.
I don't mind it. I think it depends on the group, perhaps. Not, I wouldn't play it with everyone. Mm. And as soon as we start getting up, you know, the 6 to 8, I'm often like, you know what, there's just probably better games, unless they're like proper board gamers. Normally what happens is the more people you have, the more diluted the experience ends up being, and therefore I mean
certain games it does feel like if you've got 10 players you're just playing 1/10 of the game, as opposed to if there'd only been 3 or 4 you'd have been playing like a, you know, a better proportion of it.
I like the idea of the conversation, but I am, for all my faults, recovering AP addict. That is analysis paralysis. I spend a lot of time on my turns. I couldn't imagine what would happen if I was trying to have a discussion with someone else. I'd be like, actually, what we need to do, I've mathed it out, just hear me out, look, let me get the matrix out, and then I'll show you why it's proper, it's efficient.
But in some way you could actually like relinquish all of the responsibility and just be, hey, I'm actually just going to let you make all the decisions, and I may just jump in if I feel like I can offer something.
It might help with my condition. It actually might make it easier. You're right.
To be the passenger.
It's exposure therapy, really, isn't it? Someone just being like, no.
I once read a Reddit post about someone who played four versions of Spirit Island together and played a 16-hand version of the game that took him 2 weeks. And it just kind of blew my mind. Like, I've played a two-handed Spirit Island, which was quite a lot. Just solo, but just what he was literally just doing one turn an evening, and just working it out with hundreds and hundreds of miniatures going onto the board every turn.
Yeah,
let's stress test that. Let's see if he can go up to like 32.
I think somebody has played a 64 player game of Spirit Island. It was done on Tabletop Simulator a couple of years ago. Lots of people got together and played it. Yeah, I think it's still going. Yeah,
it's still going, though, right? Neck. That's a lot. I've said it. I think I've said it before, but I'm not a huge fan of Spirit Island.
Well, it happens to be my number one favorite cooperative game, so I'll just mark Russ down on my friendship list. There you go.
Just make sure that he doesn't win the point. That's all you need to do. That's you can directly affect him today.
Hey, I could like it if I win.
Oh, I could learn to like it.
On the basis that Paul has played, presumably, that you know, a good fair share of cooperative games, even ones that aren't necessarily designed for it, I'm going to go with that's a pretty weighty recommendation for it.
But that's not a game that I would suggest. Going back to the topic, that's not going to be a suitable game for the alien family arriving the night before the wedding. Yeah.
Too heavy, really.
Two boards of it. Go.
So I mean, just going back to the scenario, is the goal, like, what do you want? Because ultimately this is your wedding day. Like, what do you want out of this game? And is it your idea to have this, or is it just like one of those
traditions? Yeah, it's more just on their wedding? Something, maybe a short game that's not going to take up the whole evening, but to get over that initial icebreaker, you know, the two families meeting each other, have a bit of a chat, right, let's play a game, and then move on. So maybe something that takes less than 45 minutes or no more than 45 minutes or something like that, that's going to be good to introduce two families, one of them from an alien planet.
How outgoing are these families? Do you tend to find yourself, you know, and your family reserved? Do you think that they'd be kind of up for a bit of a laugh if they get placed in a slightly silly situation? Would that go down well?
We'll say that my family... possibly not. The other family, who knows? We don't know. We don't know what to expect, really. All we know is they've got no arms and four legs.
Are we at risk of any alien faux pas? Like, is standing up and acting out charade style going to, like, greatly offend their nation and people?
Exactly. We don't know.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. I mean... I'm starting to think of some interesting ones. I've no idea whether or not they would work, but I've got a couple on the cuff.
Ben has an actual library of games.
Yeah, I'm looking for inspiration.
What would I suggest to save the humanity from insulting the aliens?
So not Under Falling Skies, then. It is.
That's a great game, though. I do like that. I have to say, I'm not really a solo... I do like solo games, but I don't really consider myself a solo gamer because I just don't play them enough. But that game is one I'm really glad to have in my collection. I crack it out every now and then. It's just so easy to set up and it's fun.
No, but Falling Skies is one of my most shameful parenting moments when I was playing games with my boy and then we started playing that. And it was the first time I'd ever played it, so I was learning and I got way too into it. And he said... Dad, I feel like I'm not playing this game anymore. I was like, oh no. Yeah. I've become that guy.
Become the alpha gamer.
Yeah, you had to dial it right back.
That's quite nice that
but I just got really, really into
that. That's pretty great. I mean, most people I would play with, they'd just be like, I'm just never gonna play with that guy again. Maybe that's what's happened.
Is this like the first thing that the families are going to do, or are you going to have?
There'll probably be a meet and greet, but only for a few minutes. So yeah, it'll pretty much be the first thing that they do. So it's a game that's going to give them a good impression, not just of obviously the family, but obviously as the human race. So no pressure.
No pressure.
I mean, whatever we introduce them to, they're just going to be like this. This is the thing that humans do. This is what they're all well known for.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a similar concern. Whenever I'm introduced to somebody who's brand new to the hobby, and you must get this literally on a daily basis. I don't, but occasionally it does happen. Somebody new will come to the games club, or I'll be introduced to somebody and they're completely new to the hobby and they've only ever played, you know, your Monopolies and your Cluedos and everything else. Mm-hmm. And there's so much responsibility on, right, well, I need to pick a game that mm-hmm. they're going to enjoy. But because our hobby, where it is now, this golden age that we've been in for the last 5 years and is going to continue, there's so many different games of so many different flavors and so many different options. That one game that you give to people the first time might make them go away and think every single other game is like that. And obviously, running a board game cafe, I assume that you tend to lean towards the lighter, fun, easy to teach party games initially. But this person might be looking for a Great Western Trail. But you can't put Great Western Trail on the table to somebody who's brand new to the hobby. I mean, a small percentage of people would go, oh, wow, that was fantastic, and love it and become a gamer. The majority of people would just be scared off when you're 45 minutes in and you're still explaining the rules. But you don't want to play a silly, fun party game and then them go away, say thanks very much, and then go, oh, God, that was awful. You know, and them not actually get a good appreciation of what the entire hobby is.
Happened literally about a couple of hours ago. I had this exact same situation where they come in and I ask them what games they've played, because that's a good barometer of sort of where they are in the gaming hobby. And they came in and they said, you know, played Scrabble, Monopoly. And I was like, okay, great, classic games. And again, you do your best. You can sort of like ask them a few more questions, but there's no way you can please everybody. So you can't just, you know, you have to go light. Yeah. And if they don't like that, that's the risk you're willing to take. You're not going to, as you said, throw down a really heavy game on it. So I brought them a range of options. I feel like I should maybe say the games, because I brought in Geister Splits because that's like my go-to. Here's like a step in a different direction of a game you probably haven't played before.
Yeah.
I brought them Lost Cities, which is one of my favorite lighter two-player games, but on the heavier end. And I brought them on Onitama as well, because if they know chess, that's like a kind of easy way to get them in, but still. And I set them, and I like, they said, oh, they all sound really good, so I left them on the table, and I think they ended up playing Geister Splits.
Right.
And then about sort of 30 minutes later, I see the guy of the couple come back to the library and clearly searching for something. And I was like, oh, yeah, what are you looking for? He's like, Scrabble. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. You know? I was like, did I do my job right? Did they play that game? And then they were like, yeah, this isn't for us. And then they've gone back to something that they know. Or maybe they just decided, like, actually, we're in a cafe. We want to just enjoy a game that we know. There's no way. And I don't want to sort of, like, pry, so... I just left them to it, and I think they had a really good time. But yeah, it's so funny how you put a lot of pressure on yourself to try and pick the right thing. And
I mean, I remember I was in a situation once where some people had come up and they said, "Oh, we've played Catan," and straight away you categorise them in a totally different ballpark to the "I've played Monopoly and Scrabble," which we hear all the time. So the fact that they played Catan, I was like, right, you are a step, you know the game, you know the hobby, you know. So I got out ones of something similar to that. I think I got out like Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, Splendor, you know, all of these sort of, you know, reasonably lightish gateway games. And then the other person who was helping me run it suggested Cards Against Humanity, and I just put my head in my hands and I just went, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of that game, it must be said. But it's the fact that they came in and said, oh, yeah, we've played Catan. So I was trying to pick one of a similar thing to that. And what they came in with, oh, yeah, no, this is the game we always use on new people because it's a good introduction to the hobby. Yeah, I don't speak to that person anymore because personally, I don't think it's a good introduction to the hobby because I don't think it is representative of what the board gaming hobby is. It's got its place and it's got its time when that game is fun with the right people, but I don't think it's a game that should be played with brand new people. So I'm hoping none of you were going to suggest Cards Against Humanity as the pre-wedding family get-together.
Strike that off.
I mean, it's really throwing you in at the deep end there, isn't it? Sink or swim, if that's how you're going to like meet the family. Like you might, it might be.
And tonight
perfect,
we're going to play Naked Twister.
Set everyone.
It's like,
We're either going to become the closest family ever, or we're never looking at each other in the eye again.
I have to check actually before we do the recommendations, Paul. Are you going to forego your own personal preferences and pick the game that you think is best for the scenario?
No.
Or do we have to appeal somewhat?
This is not going to be my choice. This is going to be the game that I think is going to be best for everybody else. Otherwise, Ben could just turn up with that copy of Star Wars Rebellion that I can see in the background, and we'll play that. Just screw everybody else. Leave them at the bar. I'll just play that.
It's your wedding night.
Yeah, who cares if the aliens haven't seen Star Wars? It's fine. It's good enough. They don't need to have played it.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season or arc has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
All right. And with that, let's get on to some recommendations. Does anyone have anyone that they would like to go first with, the one that they're feeling confident about?
Well, I was gonna say Cards Against Humanity, but I need a second to think of a new one.
That's fair. Oh, okay. Cross all of those out. Yeah. Exploding Kittens, no.
I'm gonna be saying I'm not that confident about my choice for this one. I'm usually feeling pretty good about it, but the one I had in my back pocket was one we have already suggested on a previous, and I feel like, you know, new content.
You can double dip.
I'm not doing what you did.
Wow, shots fired.
Oh, cooled out. It's a quality game. It deserves to be recommended every week, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm happy to go first. I'm happy to go first, just even though I'm not confident.
I think we're all going to be the least confident we've ever been when recommending for an alien interlopers.
Yeah.
So go for it. Well, what's your pick?
Into family weddings.
So it's a very... I just thought you want a game that's sort of like really simple. Just before I suggest it, I just want to clarify that they're okay with like language, so you can still teach them the game, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So... one of the games I want to check. Sorry, I've just had a last minute change of suggestion because I want to check if I've done it before. Because
exciting! This just in.
Yeah.
Breaking news: Ross has changed his recommendation yet again.
Oh,
let me interrupt this podcast.
Okay, I can do it. All right. So obviously, with a game that you're introducing to people, I know that you said they're not too worried about them understanding it, so rules wise I'm assuming we're good as long as we can sort of pass on the rules. But one of the games I love introducing new people, and it's as much of a spectator game as it is a game that you can participate in, is a game called Jam Sumo. So this game, I might have mentioned it on the podcast before, but I don't think I've ever suggested it. It's a wooden game. So it's one of those really nice wooden created games with dice, but it's a physical game. It's not necessarily strategic. It's just flicking dice onto this wooden board. It's super simple. This wooden board has four corners, and on each of these corners is a little like raised platform. And in the very center of this board is a small hole, just enough to fit a dice in. So there's two parts to the game. The first is the jam part, and then the second is the sumo part, hence the name. Although, whether how close that game that represents each half is dubious, but whatever. The jam part is you're trying to get all of your dice into that center hole. So all you do on your turn is you either take a dice from your supply, or you place, you flick a dice that's already on the board and try and get it in the hole. That's all you do. However, the game, that part of the round ends when any player's dice have all been sort of removed, and then the rest of the players will count the number of pips on all of their dice remaining, and that will be their negative score going into the second round. And then the next part of the round is the sumo, so everyone takes all their dice back into their supply, and then they'll line them up on the corner just in front of these little raised platforms on the corner. And again, their goal is about flicking dice, but instead, this time, you want to try and keep all of your dice on the board. So getting them in the hole or flicking them off is the way to lose points, essentially. So it's really... I hope I did a decent enough job of explaining the game there. But it's just a really light game. You show people... Basically, you show people what to do within like a minute or two. They kind of grasp the concept of the game. But every time I've played it, it always gets a lot of laughs. It's like people have so much fun playing it. And one of the reasons I like it is because the creator, the designer of this game, his name's Gavin Birnbaum. He's a really creative man.
Yeah.
So, he's a really creative man. He actually doesn't play many board games. He hardly plays board games. And his inspiration comes from when he was playing with his kids. And I think the design of a couple of his earliest designs came from when just like looking at his kids' toys on the floor of the playroom or whatever, and then came up with the game design. And not only that, but he makes them himself in his shed, all of the games that he produces. So it's a very limited run of games. So, you know, he can't afford to have a bad game. Like he can't just have a bad game. So... and this is the one that he keeps coming back with. I think he's done two reprints of this over, you know, his game designer career. He even did a 5-player version of it with sort of modular. You can move where the stands are around the edge of the board, and it's in a circular design, not a square design. But it's just had such a good success rate. It does, as I mentioned, it does only have limited players. The original only has like a 4-player, but because the game's sort of fairly quick, you can easily sort of get a game finished in about 15 minutes, which would allow for other people to join. And as I said, it's as much of a spectator game as it is a game that you enjoy playing, which I think is a factor in this.
I feel like it's almost like a coffee table game where you kind of have it out on display, and then people will be like, What's this game? Yeah. That looks very interesting. And they're like, oh, ho, ho! I've been waiting for someone to just ask me that question.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I think it's those... the best bit is it comes in a really unassuming cardboard box, which does look a lot like a pizza box. So, you know, you wouldn't even think it's a board game unless it was sort of like out on display anyway. And it is one of those games that you could easily put on a... on display, and people would be curious about it, and I think that's a really good thing.
I think so. The other bit was that the sumo, which is when you're trying to not be knocked off, I think it ends when one player is eliminated, and then it's like a point, isn't it, at that point?
Yeah, so I didn't I didn't finish the rules, my bad. So basically the second half of the game ends when any players all of their dice have been eliminated. So it becomes a sort of self-player balancing game, because the player who does really well, if you know, sometimes there's only a couple of points in it, but sometimes there's a clear lead, and that means that everybody is now gunning for that player, which might not be good for, you know, bringing people together.
It's unless it's against
one other target, but it is a sort of like interesting, and the game is supposed to be played over like several sort of rounds. And you add up your points. You can have like an overall victor could be sort of taken down by people sort of targeting them. But it's just, I don't know, I just think this is such a nice game. And he has a lot of other great games. He goes under the name Cubico, in case you are curious to look them up yourselves. There's plenty of good ones.
Excellent.
Any questions?
Do you want a question on this one first?
Something like that. I mean, I've played a couple of Gavin's games, and I've met him a few times at various things. That one in particular sounds like it's definitely more of a fun activity, because it has the physical nature to it rather than just sitting there moving pieces around. So in that respect, it would be, I think, quite good as a sort of first contact game for Aliens, to show we're actually having fun. It's not just we're going to move these pieces around and trying to score points and whoever wins, but we're actually doing a sort of fun activity kind of thing. And I think anything, and it's the same thing when you're explaining rules to people. When you're explaining rules to people, you can sit there and you can read the rule out, or you can read the rule out whilst also moving the pieces on the table. And it's the fact that there is a physical component to it as well as a verbal component that has more of an impact. So, yeah.
Ben, did you have one?
Okay, yeah. Should we do mine? So, I'm going to recommend a game called Fire in the Hole, which is a pirate-themed game. But it comes kind of like a child's pop-up book. It's like a cardboard that you open out, and then the paper like pops up. And it's a pirate ship with some waves on the ocean, and inside the ship is a grid of cardboard with, I forget exactly how many, something like 24 holes. And it's your job. You have these little puffy puffball cannonballs. Of each player has a different coloured set, and you're trying to lob them into the pirate ship. To score points. But if you land on someone else's pieces, you take them out. So you've got a lot of... You're trying to control certain areas, you're trying to block other people, you're trying to knock other people out, and you've also got some silly cards where you can have a big cardboard octopus in front of someone to, like, block their shot, or you can spin the ship around, which sort of confuses people and, like, has the mast block their shot. It's really quick-fire, super easy-to-understand game that's very colourful and very tactile and just... Just a good, like, sort of fun game that doesn't take too much concentration, and there's a nice icebreaker at the start of a game's evening.
So it's a fully competitive game, is it? Is everybody playing the game to try and win themselves?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly the rules now off the top of my head about how that works, but is it when one player's wiped out?
I think it's...
Or is it when you collect, everyone's like thrown all their balls?
Three or four connected pieces.
That's it. It's kind of like Connect Four. Yeah. You're trying to, like, get a run, and so other people are trying to block you while filling... Because if you land on someone else's piece, you take theirs out and yours goes in instead, and you're just trying to get like a run of your own colour while blocking other people's colours.
You're playing it in turns by playing a card, and the card will tell you like what kind of cannons you're firing, essentially, or what monsters you're summoning up, and that's how you kind of either throw in, everyone's throwing in at the same time, you're throwing two this time, you know, the Kraken's come up.
Yeah, you got to do it with one like hand over your eye, or like all sorts of silly things to like just mix it up.
So, in terms of introducing this game to an alien species as a sort of way to show them what we do as humans, there would need to be a little bit of context involved in it, because obviously pirates, the theme,
that's
we
true.
All understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But are the pirates the good guys in the game, and you're fighting against monsters?
You're just trying to land your shots onto the boat. So I guess the pirates are the bad guys, and we're all trying to defeat them together.
Right, okay.
But whoever gets them the most is the winner.
Wow,
I guess the theme's not super strong. It's more just kind of silliness. That's just about throwing little balls of
Connect Three on a pirate ship. And now I'm like, wait a second, that it's really cool.
I'm trying to explain it. It sounds a lot worse than it is.
The one thing that I was concerned about is that there was going to be conflict between the players, but it sounds like there is a mutual enemy, and everybody is trying to, you know, attack that enemy, as it were, and then it's just how well each person does.
It's really whoever connects three in a row first will win. So if one person looks like they're in a strong position, everyone will be trying to knock out their pieces so someone else can win.
Okay.
So it's definitely, I wouldn't want to sell it as co-op at all. But it's fast-paced enough that it kind of doesn't matter who wins. Mm. And even if you are behind, one good shot can put you right back in the lead again. It's like a very close competitive game.
Right.
And it plays very fast.
Mm. Did you have any questions about that one? Or have we answered the questions now?
No. Yeah.
Okay. So for my recommendation, I've gone with a similar theme, I think, which is we're avoiding the strategy. I think that's probably the wrong entry point for these new in-laws, potentially, of yours. I think we are kind of icebreakers, kind of easier. The game I would recommend is going to be Cluster. So Cluster's quite an interesting game. There's essentially 24 magnets in a box and a piece of string. And the string is laid on the table to make a circle, a hoop, and then you just take it in turns by placing a magnet into the string circle that you've created. You can make it harder in theory by reducing the size of this little circle. But what you're trying to do is get rid of your entire hand of magnets. If you place it down...
Or foot of magnets.
Yeah. And what will happen is if you place it down in such a fashion that some of the other magnets are attracted to it, then you have to pick those up and then you add it into your hand and then you carry on going. And it's this really interesting, quite like bit of tension, but it doesn't really matter. The stakes are pretty low. You can play a game in under 2 minutes. You can make it very difficult. If there was eight of you and you wanted to play, just use two boxes of it. I'm sure it'll be fine. Or you make it an interesting circumstance or whatever. So I think it's really interesting. It goes down very well as a very light ice-breaking game. You can kind of get that on. I normally use it as like the first game we play when people sat down and then you're like, okay, stop talking, stop chatting, stop asking people how you've been. Let's get onto the board games, right? And so I'll bring out a cluster. They'll be like, oh, cool, what's this? And then we're like, okay, we've played that. Oh, no, you want to play another one? Oh, no. Okay, I guess we're playing a second game of this. any questions on that one?
It's a game that I've heard of. So I've actually heard of it and I've seen it being played. I don't have it myself. What is it about the game that you think would be suitable for the aliens? What is it specifically that you think, oh, yeah, this would be a good way to show them what we do as humans to have fun?
So it's very visual, and I think the fact that as soon as you start engaging in it, most people are smiling. They're kind of like, oh, right. They're kind of like, there's the tension as it slowly creeps around to your turn, and you're like, oh no, there's fewer holes. You've just taken the hole that I was going to put mine in. Now I have to find another area, or I'm going to have to pull the string slightly to try and change where the hole is so I can maybe fit in my... And so... I guess the what we're selling to the aliens is having a good time, and whoever I bring Cluster out to, they always have a great time. So it is a bit of a bonding experience. I've definitely seen when people like instantly you're talking about it, you're just like, oh my god, this is so tense, or you're instantly communicating about the game that's going on at the time, and that's kind of what we're I like. When you're meeting people and you know it's an instant connection with someone that you otherwise didn't have, and that can really make the rest of the evening very easy.
You know what else is kind of good about it is the game is about building up tension, but it gets to a point where the magnets sort of like snap together, and that is like a tension reliever. And you'd hope that that would transcend across any tensions that were building up against, like, the two different families.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. Thanks, Russ.
That's really interesting.
I'm a friendly gamer. I like to just make sure everyone's getting the full, full
sounds
experience.
Like it would transcend language and culture.
I mean, it would also be cool if they didn't have magnets or magnetism on their planet. Because they'd be thinking it was like some magical forces at work.
Yes.
Or maybe they're metallic.
Oh, yeah, that might be
aliens.
A problem.
We didn't establish that.
Here's a game for us.
Oh, no. How do you put this down?
It's going to destroy their space pacemakers. Yeah. And they just drop down dead.
Oh, dear. Gosh. Warning labels on these boxes. Yeah. So there you go. Have you got any last questions for any of those three recommendations?
I'm trying to remember what Russ's was now, because I've heard two other ideas since and I've forgotten all about Russ's. No, it was the dice. That was it. Jam sumo. And I'm coming at this from a game without direct conflict between the players would be a good thing. Because otherwise you might get somebody who is a little bit offended by things, and I think the cluster game, there isn't really that. There's no direct confrontation or direct moves that you can make against somebody else. You know, if you put a magnet in a big wide open space, you're putting it there because you think that's a safe space. You're not putting it there to hurt anybody else. Indirectly, you've made it harder for everybody else, but, you know, that wasn't your intention. The fire in the hole sounds fun. It sounds like the game that I need to probably try myself at some point, because it does sound quite a lot of fun. Mm. But I'd be concerned by that, especially if people are potentially deliberately making moves to knock other people out, if that's something that they can do in the game. And a similar concern with the Jam Sumo as well, in that if one player's doing well and getting ahead and, you know, scoring well, that everybody else kind of gangs up on them, which as gamers, we all know, well, that's what we need to do, because this person's winning, so we all need to, you know, work against them, because otherwise they'll just win, and we understand that. But for anybody new, that could potentially cause a bit of trouble or cause somebody to get upset, kind of thing. So I'm leaning towards cluster, just because I think it might be the safest one to avoid any potential people getting upset.
Do you know?
I wouldn't blame you.
Fair
play. Sounds like the right pick to me.
I'm going to kick myself because that was what I was just going to pick initially before I swerved towards Jam Sumo.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Genuinely was going to pick cluster. I'm devastated. I thought actually the reason I didn't pick it was because we didn't really talk about the aliens, like, and anything about them, and I was like, I don't know if it'd be too simple or maybe the fact that maybe like picking like this very, it's kind of, yeah, maybe more about the too simple aspect of the game, but hey, that's as much of its strength as it is.
So did you have a backup if Russ was going to pick cluster?
I had a couple, okay, because we have similar games that are just kind of easy to pick up, visually interesting. I think it would have run, so one of my second one games would have been Croconole, but I think that runs into potentially the same issue that you're sort of saying. It's not direct competition in the same way as maybe Fire in the Hole might have been. However, it's slightly less indirect than it would have been for Cluster, but it's all kind of trying to get into that zone, but you are trying to hit somebody else's kind of puck. So it's like a big circular wooden board game that looks absolutely wonderful. We have one in every cafe because they are as much art pieces as they are great games. But that was one of them. I'm glad I've gone with Cluster based on your on your reasoning behind it. In terms of the game suiting the needs, do you feel like Cluster suits your need, or is it just the best of a bad
bunch? I think it does, because it will show these outsiders that here's something fun. And the bit that I liked about it is that we talked about the fact that not everybody would play it, but there would be some spectators. And I've not played it, but I have seen it being played. Is that a moment where you're putting something down and everybody's going, ooh, and then it snaps together, it's like, oh, kind of thing. That, I think, will show to an alien race, here's what we're doing. And they can see that it's fun. And they can see that everybody builds up and then laughs about it. Of course, they might look at us with their four legs thinking, who are these strange humans? Why are they, you know, getting excited about this? But I think it does have that element to it that I think it would be quite entertaining and good fun.
Well, excellent. So this week's point goes to me, I guess.
Bravo.
Hooray!
Well done.
There's been few points going my way, so I'll take that as a great victory for me. But I guess with that, thank you so much for coming on, Paul. Where can people find you? Obviously, you've got the great Gaming Rules YouTube channel.
That's pretty much the main place for stuff. I do have a Gaming Rules page on Facebook, which I use. That's pretty much the only social media that I use. I left Twitter for various reasons, and I could not get used to Instagram. I couldn't get it working properly, and I still don't really understand what TikTok is. But that's probably an age thing. So I've got a Gaming Rules on Facebook page, but the main thing is the YouTube channel, and I do a wide variety of videos ranging from professionally created tutorial videos that take me anywhere from 30 to 70 hours to create, although the Frosthaven one took about 110. right through to videos where I will just, you know, have random discussions about things. And we did one a couple of weeks ago where I've had a game on my shelf for over 2.5 years, Ginkgopolis. People have been telling me for the last 5 or 6 years this game is absolutely fantastic. And like many, many games, there's just not enough time to cover them all. I got a copy of Ginkgopolis about 2.5 years ago, and it's been sat there and never played it. So a few weeks ago, we did a live stream on the channel one Friday night where we went live, we said hello to the audience, and then we unboxed the game, we punched out the components, and we learnt the rules, and then we played the game, all live. So it was obviously very rough, but it just shows the different types of videos that I do. The funny thing was, because I made a point of saying, nope, we're not going to open the box until the actual video starts, I didn't realise that I had a French copy of the game. So we took out the French rule book, and then we looked through the box, and we realised there was no English rules, and then we turned the box over, and the back of it's in French, at which point I remembered the publisher said, we've only got a French version of the game to send you, is that okay? And this was all going out live, and it was fantastic. So while we were going out live, I disappeared out of the room, printed off the English rule book, came back, and it was great. But of course, the reason I'm sort of mentioning this is that I'm known for my tutorial videos of being, you know, really well done, really scripted, really well. So people go to my channel looking for tutorial videos and might go, oh, he's done a video on Ginkgopolis, I'll watch this.
Well edited.
And then go, wait a minute. Who is this guy? What's this nonsense? So yeah, if you do go to my channel, there is a wide variety of videos. Some of them are paid for by publishers. Some of them are ones that we just do for fun. And the ones that we just do for fun tend to be a bit more rough, should we say.
It'd be really funny if there's people out there that have just like never seen your channel before, but it's popped up in the algorithm. They've clicked through, they've gone, oh, who's this gaming rules chap? And they've looked at the skin cop, bless him, being like,
yeah, exactly.
That Paul Grogan, I mean, he's a terrible teacher.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Doesn't even know his own game.
This is one of the downsides that I've got. Now, a few people over the years have told me that I should just keep my channel for the instructional videos that are well done, because then that's the brand. But that's not me. I just want to do my channel, and I want to do the different things on the channel, and that's why there's a wide variety of content on there. So just don't judge me if you go and watch a video of us opening the box and finding that there's no rule book in it. It was quite funny.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. I can appreciate you've been very busy, and I hear you've got a stream even just later today. So thank you very much for carving out the time.
Yep. Part three of the Arkham Horror card game, which I'm currently playing through the Edge of the Earth campaign, which is fantastic. So yeah, I'll be setting that up ready for tonight.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. And Ben, where can everyone find us?
Oh, we don't know the new channel yet. The new channel URL hasn't been fixed, so I can't say that. But I can say, please subscribe to us on YouTube and download us wherever you get your podcasts.
Ooh. And
non-specific until the new channel's sorted out. Sorry.
Thank you so much for joining us for the podcast.